There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you all along. Remember to get through to the show, which I love. Text line and the phone line, both 343-0106. So for a text or a phone call, 343-0106. You can also use the FM Talk 106.5 app to leave us one of those talkback messages. So we'll have a good show today. Packed out, and that's good. And I'm a Coke Zero Cherry, or no, two of them in right now. And should prop me up for the rest of the show. Gator hunting throughout the night, sleeping for a few hours, and then making a radio show. So we'll do it. So make sure you text a lot during today's show. All right. Also coming up in hour number two, I wanted to point out that because people always love it when I get Mike Bunn on the show. And he's with Historic Blakely State Park at the Fort Mims Massacre Reenactment. I've told y'all that if you've never done before, you got to go to. It's coming up at the end of this month. He'll join us to talk about that and a whole lot more coming up later on. Plus, Corey Penn on the way. And leadoff batter right now, my friend and yours. I say my friend. We'll see. He's probably putting me back into trouble. John Sharp with AL.com. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. First of all, let's talk about – this is the happy talk, y'all. So I'm going to talk about what John loves, other than college football. He loves pickleball. He's probably on the edge. He's on the edge of going pro in the pickleball world. A lot of people don't know that about John.
Stop that now.
That's going to be the story I'm going to write, how John Sharp became South Alabama's pickleball pro. But you were at a groundbreaker or ribbon-cutting groundbreaker. What was it today for the pickleball courts?
Well, I stopped out. It was a ribbon cutting. The new courts are open over in Spanish Fort over at the town center. They're wonderful. I was over there and I played.
Of course you did.
I was over. I took a couple pictures. It's nice. They're open and yet another community with pickleball courts. It's the rage all these days. I'm a member of the Daphne Jubilee Pickleball Club. That's a lot of fun. It's a great group. It's a growing group. I mean, there is a lot of people that are members. And Daphne's had courts probably, I want to say, for 6, 7, 8 years. And at the time, they were probably the first in the area to have courts. And then it's just kind of, other than, you know, there might be a court here or there. But over time, these complexes have kind of grown. They're all over, both in Mobile and in the Eastern Shore and Baldwin County and you name it. And it is the big, the growing sport these days. Pretty much anybody, any age, any skill level can jump right in. And it's a great form of exercise. That's a lot of fun. Once you get in it and you start playing, and you start getting to be moderately good at it, you're like, well, you know, and then you get hooked. Do you want to get better? and it becomes like golf. It's the eternal frustration. So it has a little bit elements of all of that. And, certainly, anybody who plays tennis before, they have the leg up because there's a lot of paddle movement and the ability to play, racquetball if you have that path.
Well, that's what I just want to say. Am I being a jerk and just saying this is the 2020s version of racquetball in the 1980s?
Well, I don't know. I think this might, I played racquetball. It's hard. It wasn't all that much fun. I didn't really like it. But this is more communal. It seems like, you know, you go to the courts and you join a club. And I mean, like this club I'm a part of, I mean, they get together and have social events every once in a while. And it's just kind of like this activity that, you could make friends and new friends. And then, you know, then it just kind of manifests itself. And it's, I mean, you know, and it's definitely, you know, it's just something that you can play in the first thing in the morning. You play at night. There's the indoor facility now in Mobile. And so it's just gotten to be kind of this real, I don't know how to describe it. It's become a part of a community now that's grown. And that's a lot of fun. I think that's makes it unique versus a lot of other sports that, you know, you dabble in, but, you know, if you maybe might have a buddy who plays it, but beyond that, you don't know anybody else. And then you show up at the health club and you get burned out on it after a while. This is something that you can do for a while, and there's a lot of folks that are doing it as well. And I think that makes it a lot of fun, makes it stand out.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's what the voice of somebody who's in a cult sounds like. He's the pickleball cult. We'll have a big Discovery Channel or whatever that shows the 48 what is it, ID channel expose on Pickleball the Cult. But that'll be 10 years from now. Now, 10 years ago, here's my transition. 10 years ago, your headline here, and it did indeed. It all started in Alabama. An unexpected rally 10 years ago led Trump to the White House. And I guess most people remember, there's youngsters, maybe not, but it was, it was a big deal. Trump was, I'd say he kicked it in the next gear coming out of that event here at Ladd People Stadium, right? 10 years ago, this month.
Yeah, certainly. So, and you can go back and look at some of the events leading up to Ladd People Stadium were drawing crowds. I mean, 3,000 to 4,000 folks is nothing to sneeze at for a political event.
Right.
But there was nothing like a stadium size event that had occurred up to this point in that campaign. And the first one was in Mobile. Yeah, it was at Ladd People Stadium. Initially, and I remember covering this even here in Memphis as it kind of grew. But 10 years ago, initially, they were thinking about holding the event at the convention center. Then that grew to the Mobile Civic Center. And then all of a sudden, you know, as that Ladd People Stadium, this kind of evolved over the course of a week. And when they started saying, yes, things going to be at Ladd People Stadium, I was kind of like, what in the world?
No, it didn't grow like that.
Be at this thing?
I mean, and people, you know, may not remember that because, I mean, it was... But it was, hey, he was coming to town, and talking to the people that were bringing him to town, they're like, okay, we got him here. And then they're like, okay, scratch that here. Like you just said, and then, oh, it's going to be at Ladd People's. That happened, to me, it seemed like, what did you say, in a week's time?
Yeah, it was a very short, it was a quick turnaround, and it was kind of like, you know, the shuffling around of venues in Mobile. But, yeah, the largest one by far is Ladd People. There was nowhere else you could have a stadium-sized rally in Mobile, because at the time Hancock Whitney did not exist, and so you had Ladd People Stadium. That was the only choice. That's where it wound up being, and yes, it drew a large crowd. And as I quoted you in the story,
yes,
crowd size has always been the debated topic du jour of that rally, and it kind of laid the foundation of a lot of debates, whether they're part of the Trump phenomena or not going forward. But that's, you know, there's always been this debate, how many people were actually there? And well, I mean, you know, there's no scientific number, because nobody was sitting there taking clicking the ticker as people walked in. If someone was doing that off on their own, please come forward and let us know, because at this point, you know, 10 years later, I know for a fact that we don't know the exact count at that event, but it was a large crowd. I mean, and that's the bottom line. And that's,
yeah, but
I mean,
it did start something. You're right. I mean, it is the path through here that led President Trump to the White House. But it was the numbers thing. And I didn't realize when it happened, I had no context to it, right? What John's talking about, so I'll get myself in trouble again a decade later. And John quotes me in the story that back then I think I said it was 21,000. I was at the event. We had an event. We had FM Talk 106.5 listeners out there. We had a kind of meet and greet beforehand, went in, did the event, and then... Somebody, it may have been you who asked me how many people are here. And I said, I just kind of looked around. I said, okay, there's this many seats in Ladd People's. I mean, I was just doing just guessing. And I said, 21,000. And you'd have thought, I didn't realize at the time, then it's just people went berserk. They're like, why are you trying to downplay Trump? I was like, I'm not downplaying him. I've never seen a politician come to town that put 2,100 people somewhere, let alone 21,000. But like you said, going from then on, it became, if people remember in the first run for Trump, every event, it was some argument about the number of people. And they'd like, oh, we left people outside. We had to close the door. I mean, we had great turnouts, but it was an obsession with like a number. right? A crowd number. I didn't know that was a thing. Yeah. It wasn't a thing when I said what I said, but after that, it sure became a thing.
Yeah, and it really got it had its roots in becoming a thing in Mobile, and probably with you, Sean. So there you go.
Yeah,
I started a national phenomena. But yeah, no, it really became a thing at the inauguration, crowd size, and I know that was. Remember Sean Spicer coming out, you know, letting the media have it for the national media, trying to estimate the crowd size and the juxtaposition of pictures between the Trump inauguration crowd size and the Obama. And that went on and on at the very beginning of his first term in office. And but, I, you know, at the time, I remember writing a story, hey, this has its roots in Mobile, because this came up back in August of 2015, in which you know, we really, you know, was it 30,000? Was it 40,000? It was probably somewhere in between. But we really don't know. But it was a large crowd. It was, you know, people standing in line for quite some time. I remember that visually. You know, people were standing in line. It was a rock concert before we really truly understood what these rallies were like and what they would be going forward. I mean, people were there to see this New York celebrity coming into Mobile whose political career was starting to ascend. And it all happened. It all came together at Lab People Stadium. And it kind of reminds me, you know, a legendary rock band, you know, like Kiss.
Sweet.
You know, their shows were awesome. You know, everybody's gone to a Kiss concert. But in the early 70s, 1974, 1975, you know, they weren't the touring act that they became eventually. But if you were at that concert early, you know, those early concerts, you can say, yeah, I was there when they started coming up and they were, it was a great show back then. Well, that's kind of how this was, you know, it's kind of like before the Trump rallies really matured in that and became these more of a, you know, structured, streamlined. I mean, you go to an event there at, you know, they've taken a life of their own. But really the first one was at Lab People Stadium. People that were there, you know, they had a lot of the elements that exist today in the rallies, but there were some things that, you know, it was kind of a stripped-down version behind the scenes. I mean, there wasn't, you know, the people I talked to that met the future president at the time said when they were, you know, they were just, you know, in the foyer at Lab People Stadium and there was Donald Trump meeting with them. It wasn't like some grand opulent backstage room where he was at, like, or any kind of event, like, yeah, I've, you know, the graduation event at the University of Alabama was more structured, and it seemed like a grander event behind the scenes than clearly being at Mobile and 10 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, it was the first, and I think Mobile can claim that. I mean, whether you like Donald Trump or you don't, that's just the way it was. I mean, it was the first rally. And then he came back in 2016 after winning the election. He came back in December.
Christmas time.
And Mobile, Christmas time. And Mobile was the very last stop during the thank you rallies because he knew that rally that he had in 2015 really kickstarted, you know, his rise to the top of the Republican field. You got to keep in mind, back in 2015, He was leading, starting to lead the pack of Republicans running at the time. But you know, Alabama's Republican Party, they had an executive committee meeting. They had a summer meeting up in Talladega, and a lot of the Republican office holders at the time were at that meeting. They were not in Mobile, and that's unheard of today.
Yeah.
They'd all be in Mobile.
That's true. I didn't think about
then,
that. They would not miss it in today's world, but back then people did miss it. And,
right.
And, you know, some of the names you and I have talked about there, I mean, it's interesting how it focuses around a one-time senator and a maybe senator for the state of Alabama. Jeff Sessions was there, but then Barry Moore, Congressman Barry Moore, there he was the first to endorse, I guess. And so both of these people, one who was a senator, one that might be our senator in the future.
Yeah, you talk about rolling the dice there for Barry Moore. I mean, he rolled snake eyes, man. He was the first one to get up there. It's all worked out quite well. And now, you know, he's running for Senate and he can honestly say that, hey, I was the first to make the endorsement. That's true. I mean, he stood up there and, of course, I think there was a group of about four or five lawmakers that all made that endorsement at the same time. But the way the story goes is they were pulling up in an RV to Lab People Stadium and, there was an official with the Trump campaign it was just kind of walking by and saying, hey, is anybody here? Can anybody here endorse Trump? And Barry Moore said he thought about it, prayed about it for a moment, talked to his wife about it, and said, sure, why not? And then got up on stage and was part of the warm-up act before Donald Trump came out. And, you know, here he is today running for Senate. And, of course, Jeff Sessions was the was kind of the Alabama star at the time. He walked up on stage. He did not make an endorsement that day, but he was the first sitting senator at the time to be seen in an event with Donald Trump.
And he put the hat on.
And he put the hat on. That occurred in Mobile. But he would make the endorsement sometime a few months later in Madison and became the first sitting senator, I think, at the time to make that endorsement. So, so a lot of history there at that rally, which I was at, you were at. I know that there's a lot of folks that were there as well, probably have stories to share to this day. Maybe some that are true or untrue. I don't know, but I remember it clearly like yesterday. And it's been 10 years ago. That shows you how fast 10 years goes.
Yeah, Dalton and I were just talking about the whole, Dalton and I both there, and I said, you know, I was a much younger man. I said, you were really a much younger man back then, Dalton. But, 10 years has flown by. If y'all want to read John's story and pick at me for the number of people I thought were there, you find that over at AL.com. And, John, if people want to reach out to you directly, maybe even to talk pickleball, where do they find you online?
I'm on X at JohnSharp99, and we are going to be switching to college football too here soon. So I'm getting excited about that next week, right?
Yep, that's right. Have you done the click through? Are you in this year's college pick 'em?
I'll be in it, but I haven't.
Go do that because I love it when you're.
I will.
All right, all right, John.
All right.
Thank you for your work, man, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, John. Talk to you later.
All right, there goes John Sharp. We're coming right back. More Midday Mobile plus Rob Holbert with Landyap. Joins us around 12:30. Corey Penn running for District 1 City Council at 1. And my man Mike Bunn at 1:30. We're packed out here on a Friday.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, 35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday. 343-0106 for a text or a phone call. By the way, too, some comment there. Yeah, played the clip. I wasn't thinking about doing that. John Sharp was on, and just bring him back 10 years later that I said it was 22,000 people at the Trump rally, and there was some pushback on that, we'll call it, back then. And kind of started what became a thing in that campaign and still is for President Trump, the number of people at an event. I wasn't doing it for any other reason. I was just estimating back then. How did I know I was getting in the middle of something 10 years ago? But it was fun to talk to John about that. This man remembers me from back then, Rob Holbert with Landyap, landyapmobile.com. He knew me when I said there was 22,000 people there, and he still talks to me. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I was there with you.
Yeah. So
and, I was there. Yes, you were right. I think 22,000 probably is maybe generous, but it certainly was not 40.
But what I remember telling people there, and I've told them since, that's a heck of a people are like, it was 40. I was like, y'all, we couldn't get 22,000 people to see any political figure. It was huge.
I wasn't sitting there thinking, geez, what a puny turnout. I was like, this is a huge turnout. I mean, I'm much like you. I was kind of surprised when the whole thing came out, you know, people were upset about that was a wrong number. I'm like, no, that number wasn't wrong. Half the stadium was in, but that's a pretty impressive turnout regardless.
I guess and it gets lost like in the Twitter world out there or whatever that nuance is like, I thought it was this, and that was my, I told people back then, I still, quoted in the article, I'm not a professional crowd counter, but I was just telling you the number, but 22,000 is a big deal. that part was lost in those quotes back then. I was like, this is a big deal. You say it's not 40. I'm like, it's 22,000. That's awesome. We don't have 22,000 people show up to anything where they don't throw moon pies,
Right.
So 10 years ago. All right, from 10 years to today, Rob, we got to talk about this. Of course, we've been following here, y'all's reporting on Tony Kennan, Orange Beach, and it's been going on here for, gosh, what do you think? Where are we?
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Like that.
Six weeks of this.
6, 8 weeks.
Of this discussion. And so we've talked about it, and then this has moved, I guess, into a, you know, we'll just talk about what it is, a story within a story. And that is, some kind of Russian nesting dolls of stories here. This group, and it's been talked about on Mobile Mornings, on Jeff Poor's show as well. This 1819 News and Erica Thomas's sit down with the Kennans that came out yesterday. We talked about that. And your response to that, first of all, your response to that, from your, in your words.
My response to their story is that I think that absolutely, they should have done the story, but it would have been nice for them to ask a couple of pertinent questions, which they didn't do. I think the fact that they have not done any stories, although, like TV, nobody TV's done a story on it either. But
I mean, y'all are the only one. Y'all are the only entity that's done it, right?
Gulf Coast News. I'm going to give Gulf Coast News their props. They did a couple stories on it, but we are the only ones that have been carrying the water for a while on this thing. But, you know, I guess personally, when I look at it, the way it was couched and some of the things that have been said about it were this attitude like we're support part of the cabal, these sort of things that went on unchallenged. And then, you know, the attitude, I mean, expressed by Jeff today is that, you know, it's like sort of this attitude, well, you know, this is all people trying to make somebody win an election or not. And you know, I'm going to take offense to that, you know.
Well, because I'm looking, I mean, on the text lines, you know, people have been saying that for a long time, that you and Ashley and the people who work for you at Lanyap were doing this story to try to change the outcome of this election. So let me ask you, has there ever been a discussion at all of any in Lanyap offices about doing this for a political outcome?
No, I don't care who they elect to mayor down there. It doesn't matter to me. I don't live in Orange Beach. What matters to me is doing journalistic stories. And, you know, as I probably have told you before, the first call I got on this was probably back in February or March. But somebody called me and said, hey, I want to talk to you about something, and which happens every single day. You know, and so I kind of wrote this person's name down, and I'll get back to you, whatever. It took me forever to get back to them, probably 2 months. In fact, that person said, I thought you were never going to call me back. I didn't know what it was about, so I went and visited and talked to them, and they said, hey, would you be interested in a story like this? Like, that's kind of a story. That's a pretty big story. You know, and then we researched it worked on it for well over a month before we ran it. We had to talk to people, you know, started, you know, all these things are, I know it is common. I don't expect people who are not in the news business to look at it and think, what went into this? How long did it take to do this story? I get that. They look at it and say, geez, this came out in early July, back when, by the way, Tony Kennan did not have an opponent. There was nobody running against him when we published this story. So, just for the record. But then they look at it and say, oh, this is all about trying to change the election. No, it's not. It's about, what it's about for us is looking at a situation where there was manipulation of the police department, manipulation of police records, potential for somebody to have been up there committing domestic violence, officers not performing their duty because the mayor was in his office. And by the way, Tony Kennan was welcome to tell us that exact same story back in early July.
Y'all did reach out.
We reached out to him more than a week before we ran the first story. This story, he could have told us that story, would have written every bit of it down. I also would have asked him some questions. I would have also asked him, well, if you thought there maybe was somebody that was being domestically abused outside your office, did you do a Did you order an investigation? Did you look at security camera footage from the building? That building has security cameras all over it. Those would have been questions I would ask, questions I would think that maybe 1819 would ask instead of doing a video with soft music and make it look like a campaign commercial.
I tell you, I don't know if that was a campaign commercial, trying to be a fair arbiter, I wouldn't have paid the people who produced it, because I think it left me being able to see it in body language with more questions than I had before. And it is, I would
agree with that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so
I would agree with that.
And to look at that, and the one on him then saying that we believe somebody was being domestically abused that night, whatnot, that maybe there's logic, but it seems very odd to me. That's one that, like, and I've tried to just, you know, try to make sure that we get, you know, all sides. But you're right. This other side hadn't come out till now. That one's very strange. But if you're going to try to do that and talk about it, if somebody's making that allegation against me, I'd try to get that out a lot earlier and say, hey, there's this other thing going on. It strike me as strange.
Well, it does. And it's, you know, that's the thing I've asked them from the beginning. You know, we had a police report that showed something went on up there, and that they made contact with an individual up there, although they didn't name who it was, and they buried the report as much as possible. But it, you know, you say, okay, well, there, logically, if it's not the mayor who was in the mayor's office at 1 in the morning, then somebody was in the mayor's office at 1 in the morning, and somebody the police contacted the mayor's wife 4 days later, so she would have said, we weren't there. That wasn't us. Tony, somebody was in our office, in your office, doing something. And you would think, well, then maybe they would conduct an investigation or look at the surveillance video that apparently, I don't know if it exists or not. I've asked for it several times. Nobody will respond. So, you know, you kind of say there's some things that happen here. Now we say, okay, well, all right, we were there. But I was changing my shorts at 1 in the morning. And, you know, maybe somebody was outside being abused. We're concerned. But then what did you do with that concern? And, you know, it's the same thing when he says, you know, people in the city council are taking police cars. They're using police cars to drive them home. Nobody asked, well, who are they and when did that happen? Or as the mayor, why do you allow that to happen? But, I mean, those are questions. Poor journalism is poor journalism. That's fine. That's their deal. The biggest issue to me is, you know, people are going to start to try to undermine what we've been working on for months. I've got an issue with that, and I'm going to take issue with it. So,
yeah, that's it. And it's, you know, once again, so, I mean, the questions I've seen over time, okay, number one was the timing, which you explained the timeline, and I don't get the calls that y'all get at Lanyap, but I, you know, do get calls. People have scoops for me, and sometimes I don't get back to them for a week or so because there's a whole bunch of other stuff I do here than just call, you know, scoops back, unless I know somebody.
Right.
And then a lot of times those people have a scoop for me that I don't have a research. We're not investigative journalists like you are. And so I'm like, well, that's interesting, but you have to give me something more. I can't just, you know, I'm not just going to go on the air and say something that I can't verify. So it usually stops at that cul-de-sac with me. But in addition, timing wise, and I said this before, you and I hadn't talked, but I said to the audience, I said, I know Rob, I know Ashley, and if they'd have gotten this story and knew, you know, all the parts of it, if you called them back right away, y'all would have run it then. You wouldn't have, or would you? Or would you? I mean, sure. To me, the competitive nature of media, you would hate to have that story and then not do something with it and then somebody else scoop you.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, it makes no sense. We're not sitting on a story like that. I mean, look, I know that everybody's in a very partisan world we live in. We don't care. I don't care what brand of car is going down the road. We're going to chase it. You know, that's how it is. And, you know, there's not a political part to this. This is what we do. We do this all the time.
We chase stories
like this all the time. You know, I mean, we run stories down whenever we get a chance. I get people who call me from all over the state to say, y'all are the only newspaper in the state. Well, it will do this story. Here it is. So, you know, the concept that we're going to sit around and hold something near an election when there is not an opponent. Let me re- and hold on to that is kind of ludicrous. It's silly as hell. That's not what we do.
Look at this one. Read one of these texts coming in here. This one from David. With the way Lanyap is going after Kennan, you would think his name was Sam Jones. It's a way to say, you've done the same thing.
There you go, right. You know, yeah, we went after Sam Jones hard. That's right, because there was a lot of stuff going on there. And I think that much like this circumstance where people were saying, oh, you know, that wasn't him and that's not him and all that, y'all are just making this up. Well, it was him. They were up there. Now, you know, the story may be different at this, you know, I don't know what the story is. I don't know who was assaulted or if anybody was assaulted up there. But we do know that there was a complaint about it and that the mayor and his wife apparently were up there in that office. And the police who came to look at it and called on it backed off and did not follow protocol and didn't make contact with Mrs. Kennan right then. They left. And so they were sent over to talk to her. In fact, the supervisor that looked at the video said, you guys didn't do your job. And so they were made to go do their job. And, you know, that's the same circumstance that you have other stories that I've looked at. There are instances in which Kennan has been involved in altercations and the police drove him home, took him back, took him away somewhere. The guy that I wrote about from the live bait bus, who's punched in the mouth, and the city settled a suit with him using city insurance for a fight at 1 a.m. on a bus. Police wouldn't let that guy file a complaint against him. So there's a pattern here. It's not just, oh, the mayor likes to go out and get, you know, have some drinks and get in a fist fight once in a while, and that's cool with us. There's some police manipulation here, folks, that is important. And, you know, if the mayor punches you in the mouth, you might like to press charges on him.
Yeah, you know, Rob, if you're just joining us, I'm Rob Holbert with Lanyap. We talked about this a couple times on the show, that there were some known things, right? And people voted for him. And they said, but he does a good job elsewhere. And so I've just kind of said, okay, well, that's people in Orange Beach, what they want. But to me, I guess what came to a head here is there's a question about something that is very serious here, this domestic violence thing. Not that you should ignore the other stuff, but that's what y'all do. I kind of, you know, in what I do, it has to get pretty big before I start noticing it. And when it comes out that there's this allegation, and obviously there's a purient nature, naked and this and that, but somebody's beating a woman, then you got my attention, right? And I know there's all this other stuff backs it up, but to me, this was the thing for me, and I don't know for other people, that made me go, okay, well, this is really worth digging into.
Well, on top of all that, you have a police chief resigning. You have police officers who say tell me they're terrified of what's going on in there, who are sick and tired of being called in the middle of the night while they're on patrol to come pick him up from a bar and take him home. You know, this is what I'm told. This isn't happening everywhere else, okay? And, you know, as far as people voting, they make the decision on whatever they want to make it on. If they think that's fine, that's fine. In many ways, I mean, the second office is unexplained. If you're using it as a weekend escape or getaway, that is a violation of state law. So those are things that we report on. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not going to apologize for it. If it came out a day before the election and we had all that information, we'd run a story on it. Absolutely. You know, I'm not really going to, you know, from the standpoint of another media outlet that takes money from individuals. We have no idea how they're financially sourced, and, you know, and they're clearly partisan. They're unabashedly partisan. They're a different animal than we are. I don't really, you know.
And listen, I mean, in defense too, they've never come on here and said they weren't right of center. They always have. I mean, that's
sure.
You know, right. So there's never
fine.
Been a.
You know what you're getting.
Right, I mean,
you know,
like, tell everybody, I'm right of center, right? Everybody knows what they're getting with me. Most days,
I understand that, but I mean, you're, you know, they're
you don't know who's paying them, and you also have to wonder, like, okay, well, when you do a debate and you don't ask questions about this issue, and then you don't do any stories on this issue, but when you finally do it, it is a puff piece that is allows them to just kind of say whatever they want to say without being challenged in the least about information that is out there in black and white in, you know, in police reports and other things that I just think it's kind of, it's odd, you know. It's certainly odder to me than timing of the stories we did.
Well, tell you what, it's between y'all and at 18-19, y'all have taken over the airways of FM Talk 106.5, so it has been successful in that. It's the biggest thing that our listeners have talked about on the text line for the last couple of weeks. So
media catfight, I guess, you know, but whatever it is, man, it's we'll do what we do. I mean, I'm fine with. I get it. I understand that people don't get exactly what happens, and if they've got a favorite person, they feel like we're beating up on them. We're suddenly either liberal or conservative or whatever. We do what we've been doing for 23 years. I'll stand by it.
There you go. Rob Holbert, appreciate your time, and we'll be talking about this probably next week as well after the elections.
All right, man. Take care.
All right. There goes Rob Holbert from Landnap, landnapmobile.com. We're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:57 right here on the Midday Mobile program, broadcast, whatever, radio show thing. Grab a few texts here before we go to the news and come back next hour. But the incumbent here, District 1 City Council, Corey Penn, joins me. Also Mike Bunn next hour. And update on that tragedy over at Ingalls, with one dead after that shooting at Ingalls, involving people from right here in Alabama. We'll give you more on that coming up in just a little bit. Plus, we'll get a news update from WKRG. All right, from the text line here, let me try to get done. A good mix of here. This is what I'm talking about. This is interesting to see different perspectives here. Although Maximus did make me laugh. He said, did Mayor Kennan order footy pajamas also? Footy pajamas. The things I forget, and then they come back to me like that. Irish Indian says, the mayor of Orange Beach has had some shady real estate deals as well. Is that provable, Irish Indian? I mean, I'm not trying, but to say that, you said that. For me to say that, I would have to see proof of that. This from Joshua said, my liberal friends think Landnap leans right, so when the right-wingers in Orange Beach and Gulf Shores think Landnap is out for a rich, has it out for the rich mayor, I think Landnap is doing it just right. Joshua, there's a lot to be said for that, right? That's why I always say, when I, because I'm an editorialist. I'm not a journalist, investigate, you know, people are like, I'm an editorialist. I talk to people, sit down, you know, let them express ideas. But when I say something, I often say, go get you at least three stories, you know, and the truth is usually in the middle. You got a bunch more text on this. We'll try to get to these later next hour at 343-0106. News straight ahead.